Hey founders, this is the SaaS Boss Show, the podcast for SaaS founders in the growth stage who want to get unstuck, build high-performing teams, and get clarity about how to build a profitable startup. Every week, I interview SaaS consultants, coaches, and experts who work with dozens of startups just like yours and share their best strategies to overcome the daily challenges of growing a profitable SaaS. My name is Natalie Luniva, and I'm a growth and leadership coach to SaaS founders, and I'm also married to a SaaS founder, and I'm so pleased that you've joined us on this conversation. Today, it is my pleasure to interview Nicole Tibaldi about how to interview, hire amazing software engineers. Nicole is an engineer and manager for the cloud team at Gatsby, a website framework, and she cares deeply about improving tech hiring, agile processes, and bridging the gaps between product, design, and engineering. Nicole is also a speaker. I've heard her multiple presentations about hiring processes for the tech hires, and this is how I came across her and invited her to this episode. Welcome to the show, Nicole.
Thank you.
So how did you start working within the SaaS industry?
Well, it's quite a long story, I guess. I was working as a front-end engineer for a hotel booking company for a while, and then a consultancy. And then I kind of landed at a startup building developer tools, which has been the thing that I've been doing at every company I've been at since. So that's been pretty cool to kind of get focused in a certain area.
So today we'll talk specifically about how to interview and how to hire software engineers. Even before we start talking about interviewing and hiring software engineers to help us, there are so many things that we need to have in place before stepping there. And if this is going to be our first hire and we've never hired anyone in the past, then that's really like double the amount of efforts if you want to make it right and if you want the new hire to stick. So for example, the very first thing that I would suggest that you do is to really discover what type of founder you are. How do you learn? Do you learn by listening or by reading or by doing maybe? Are you a commander or someone who wants to have like a subordinate? Are you a loner or you want to work with a team? Are you a decision maker or do you need an advisor to help you make the decision and kind of force you to be the decision maker? So this is the discovery phase that I usually advise the founders that I work with to go through. And then there's a question, why do you need to hire? When do you need to hire? By the way, hire slow and fire fast is like really important. That make sure that this is really a hire that you need. And by the way, do you need the hire at all? Maybe there is something that you can do by yourself, even though I'm a huge proponent to hiring people to help you accelerate the growth so that you don't have to be, that you are not stuck and not doing the things that someone else can do so that you can focus on big picture. And then who to hire, which role is hiring a software engineer a good idea right now? So all of those things during this episode, we will not be touching on those areas, and we'll talk about what makes a good hire or a good candidate, how to conduct the screening process, and the third point is how to conduct the coding interview. So, Nicole, where do we start with searching for a good candidate?
Well, I think a lot of the points that you just identified are really good ones too, because regardless of maybe what's needed from the role in a purely technical sense, this is, you know, as a founder, someone that you will be working with, and knowing kind of what you're expecting out of a teammate essentially is really important. So I think a good first step is to sit down and think about what kind of communicator you're looking for, what kind of work ethic you need, what are the strengths and weaknesses that you need out of especially a first hire. Like, that person is going to be critical to how you ultimately build out the rest of your team and kind of sets the tone for everything that comes after.
Cool. So what are we looking for in a hire? So for example, we start looking for a software engineer, be it a team or maybe just one person. Where do we start?
The first thing that I like to identify when I am screening resumes is, from a purely technical sense, does this person kind of tick the boxes that we're looking for? And that doesn't necessarily mean have they worked with a particular technology before, but do they have a deeper understanding of the architecture that you might expect them to be working on, or the part of the stack that you might be expect them to be working on? And beyond that, you know, I think in terms of like very particular languages, those are things that can be picked up on. And I think the number one and most important thing, especially for an early hire, is this person willing and able to learn new things? Because they're always going to come up on new problems, discover things that need to be solved with technologies that haven't been used before. And so I think it's really, really critical to say, not only do they have the skill set I'm looking for initially, but also can they pick up on new things? Do they like that sort of thing? Are they passionate about learning? I think that's so, so important.
As far as personal characteristics, the things that I'm looking for in any candidate really is like, it's regardless what position you're hiring for. It is looking if the person is taking, and I'm not sure really how you can tell that by just interviewing people, but really like, are they taking initiative? Do they have the desire for excellence? Like you want to hire people who are not just, you know, doing something, but really want to be great. Are they a solution person, or are they a person who is bringing problems to you? What is some personal characteristic that you are looking for specifically in a software engineer?
A lot of these will be situational, but I'll list off some of the things that I think are most important. One is for the person to feel a sense of ownership over their work. You know, do they feel motivated to see something cross the finish line and be shipped to users? And like you sort of said, can they be empathetic to the user's, you know, the user's experience? Do they care about that sort of thing? That's definitely one. The next one is, and especially in an early stage company, can they deal with ambiguous situations? There's going to be a lot of instances where either the scope of the problem that you're trying to solve is not super clear, or the technological solution for it is very difficult and hard to solve. So I like to kind of ask questions around those topics too. You know, how do you deal with an ambiguous situation, and see if they can provide examples of those, because I think that's super critical. Another really important one in any candidate for any role, software engineer or not, is empathy. Empathy for our user, as we obviously pointed out before, but also empathy for their teammates. And again, this gets back to the point of early hires are going to be so critical for how you build out the culture of your team, which is going to be very, very important over time. You know, do they like to work with other people? Are they okay with having to mentor and explain things to other folks? Are they able to communicate in that way?
How do you try and identify all of those things in a person that you are just talking to for like 30 minutes or an hour?
It's definitely not easy, and I think the best hires that I've ever made, they require a lot of screening, right? So there are going to be many stages of your interview. I try to touch on the things that I think are sort of the non-negotiables in the early stage interviews, because, for example, if they're a very strong technical candidate but a weak communicator, it doesn't really matter how well they do with the technological aspect, because the communication piece is so important. And that person might thrive in a company where, you know, it's a much larger company and that level of communication with stakeholders isn't as necessary. They just need to sit down and do their work. Like, that's not a criticism of that characteristic at all, but especially in an early stage startup, like communication, for example, is super, super important. So I tried to, like anything else in my job, prioritize what are the most important things that I am looking for when I'm hiring somebody, and try to get a handle on those first. And then the rest falls in line, and you know when somebody maybe doesn't meet the bar. I try to ask really focused questions about experiences that candidates have had before. I think the best indicator we can get for whether or not somebody is able to work through a situation, or even what they've learned, is to ask them, hey, what happened the last time you ran into this scenario?
Can you give us a couple of examples that those scenarios like those that give you some insight into whether they're going to be potentially a good hire or no?
One of the things I like to ask is to describe a project that they've worked on, and then ask them focused questions about the different areas I might be looking for. So in some cases, it might be technical expertise. In some cases, it might be more around what they're passionate about. So mostly, I think the key is in the follow-up questions. the questions of what they've worked on can be very generic, and then you can take what they've given you and ask follow-ups to really help with, hey, this is the thing I'm trying to target. You know, can you tell me a little bit more about why that was challenging and how did you deal with it? Like, are they able to deal well with challenging situations? And just really dig in on the follow-up questions. And I've been interviewed that way before and found it to be really successful as well.
You've mentioned culture, and I think so many founders, especially bootstrapped, think that this is such an overstated term, and this is just for big companies. And really, the culture, it's not something that you have. It is something that you do. So it is basically your actions. If you are okay with people not hitting the deadlines, or like the culture is really if you encourage them or if you discourage those things. So for example, if you are not discouraging being late for work, or like anything really that is happening within the company, that's something that you encourage or discourage. And so the culture is in a way really a reflection on your norms and what you allow to happen within the company. What is your take on the culture, and how do you feel a culture affects our productivity?
I think culture is really important, but it is, again, a really loaded term that means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. I think you touched on a really important point, which is that there needs to be some thought put into what do you want, what is the shape that you want your company to take? Because what I have noticed about culture is that it's very hard to change once it has sort of taken on a life of its own. So it's about the things that you want to reinforce. And the things that I've found to be the most important, especially as a manager, are mostly around collaboration and being open to helping others, working together, allowing everyone to feel psychologically safe. I think those are the basic needs that a person has to do their best work. I think it's dangerous to assume that culture means that everybody acts the same or has the same interests. So it's really, what are the things that you want to build into your company that make sure that everybody is happy, productive, successful, moving the needle of whatever you're trying to do toward your goal?
You know, I've read a study, and there was a list of 15 top reasons why a person leaves a company. And 13 out of those 15 had to do with the CEO, the boss. And this is something that the boss could improve, or in this case, if a person leaves, then basically 13, majority, like 90% of reasons why people leave is due to the boss. So I think even when talking about hiring the person, and I hear so many stories that my employee does not do what I want them to do, they are not passionate, they are not taking initiative. Basically, all of those things, when you already have a team and you're trying to troubleshoot the problems, majority of those problems, unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on how you look at it, lie within the founder. So I think why I'm saying that it's a fortunate thing that you are the one in charge of changing those things. That's the easiest thing for you to change, right? Because if you are able to change those things, then you'll revert the situation. So when making the hire, think about those things that really it's up to you to set the person for success or not so much.
Yeah, that's a really great point. And that's why I think it's really important to interview for alignment on those things that you find really important. And those are different for everybody. They're probably different for me than they are people who will be listening to this. But there is that phrase, people don't quit companies, they quit managers. And that really is very, very true. Being in alignment on the most important things is so, so critical.
So you've started talking about that you are doing actually two interviews. So tell us about the process of interviewing.
Yeah. And again, this can be super variable depending on your use case. I have historically seen a good number of phases being really important to be able to validate whether or not a candidate is what you need. And it's important to note that it is a huge investment of time, but it is very much more expensive to realize you've made the wrong hire than to invest the time in making a great hire. That's something that I always try to keep in the forefront of my mind. So we've talked a little bit about the initial conversational screen, where we're talking about the person's characteristics, what drives them, what are their communication skills, those baseline critical things that we identified at the beginning, what are your non-negotiables. A follow-up interview might have a little bit of a deeper dive into certain areas. So, for example, if you're looking for a software engineer to work on the front end, for example, because that's where most of my expertise is, you might ask them in more detail in a second round projects they've worked on. What were the technical implementation details? Did they use React? Did they use Angular? Just digging in on the technology bits, but again, as a conversation. And I definitely really, really strongly believe in not doing gotcha interviews. I think trick questions or things that are hard just for the sake of being hard, they don't set people up for success. And that's another key point about interviewing that I would really like to make, which is that you have to make people comfortable in order for them to show you the best versions of themselves, to be able to show you their skills, to be able to communicate their experience. So I don't think trying to scare candidates is very much the right way to go. And the reason I say that is because it's something that's been so deeply ingrained in the tech industry for a long time, you know, whiteboarding interviews or what have you. Starting out with a conversational interview just for, like, around the person's work habits, moving on to something a bit more technical, and then things sort of fracture at this point and you can determine what works better for you. You might do some sort of engineering pairing interview where you have the person work with you on a small problem, guide them through it, give them opportunities to ask questions. And there, not only can you evaluate, are they able to do the work, but also, are you able to work with them? Are they focused in asking their questions? Are they patient? Do they get frustrated? Those kinds of things. And then after that, and we can talk about this a little bit more in depth if you'd like, a take-home style interview is what we like to call them, where the candidate gets some time to go away and work on a problem independently and present their solution back to you.
So you've mentioned that basically trying to ease out the interview and not be too harsh on them. Mm-hmm. There's another opinion to that where they are on their best behavior, so they're trying to show their best, right? But at the same time, you also want to see another side of the coin, right? Where you maybe want to see how they behave under stress or under some pressure. It doesn't have to be stress, but at least under some pressure. So your style is this, but I just want to give another option there that, you know, maybe someone else is going to like and do an interview another way where you actually get to see another side of the coin as well of that person you're interviewing. And I think when also another tip that we have not talked about yet is if you have a bunch of candidates, have a spreadsheet or a list of the same questions that you ask all the candidates and then jot down the answers that they are giving you so that later when you try to remember what was that person, what did they respond, it will be much easier for you to make an unbiased decision otherwise if you just like the person on a personal level, but maybe, you know, there are some other things that are not necessarily going to make that person a good fit. You want to remember those things, not subjectively, but objectively.
And that is a great point, because that's not keeping those sorts of records and not having consistency is a way that bias, which we all have, can creep into the interview process and become more about, do I like this person than do I think they can do the job? So one thing that I also think is great, along with your note-taking, is to make sure you're asking the same questions of every candidate. Obviously, follow-ups or tangents in conversation will happen, and I think those are natural and important, but making sure you're starting from the same baseline so that you also have a way to compare, okay, why did I think this way about this candidate, or what did I think their strengths were as opposed to somebody else? Because as hard as it is to think about, you know, comparing two people are all unique and individual, but eventually if you're going to make one hire, you do have to take it down to a decision of, okay, like, who is the best fit for this role? Who's going to be successful?
What are some ways that we can understand their technical knowledge and expertise? Do we give them a test task? Do we pay them for that task? What's your take on that?
I've worked for a few different companies that have done, and I would say there are a lot of different options, and they have their pros and cons like anything else. I have seen the model of paying somebody for a project be really interesting, because in that case, you can also offer them a real problem that you're working on, for example, where you might be able to use their work. Paying them makes that feel a lot more appropriate. So I would say if you're asking them to work on a real problem within your business, I would advise paying somebody for that kind of project. for other types of take-home projects, I've seen just setting up like test code bases that are a repeatable problem that is the same one that everyone solves. And while it's nice to pay people for their time, not everybody can do that, but I think it's a lot more fair to give something that's then very focused on, you know, this is just an interview question. But the basic theme here is I think it's really good to have some level of technical interview that's happening live, whether it be just talking about technical concepts or actually pair programming together, because that is the sort of opportunity that you have to see how the person works, like you were talking about before, like how do they operate under stress? Interviews are always stressful. How do they do that? And then also, like, what do they do when they're given a task to go away with and work on for a little while independently? And that's where the take-home piece comes in. Some companies don't do that, but the last three roles I've had all had some version of a take-home project, and they've been really, really interesting and very helpful to us.
When you just started hiring people, would you say that your success rate was lower than it is right now? Meaning, do you think that with time, you're learning so many different things that you may not necessarily be able to articulate even, but you're able to make the decision with much higher success so that the person actually stays?
For me personally, absolutely. I have been very fortunate, obviously, to interview on panels with other people, so you get other feedback, which is another critical point too. If you have other folks working in your company, like, pull them into the interview loop. If they're not technical, maybe let them do the more conversational screens, but getting multiple people's opinions certainly helps. But as I've done more and more interviewing, I feel pretty confident about what the things are that signal good or a great hire, and what are the things that signal something that's maybe not a fit. So it's definitely, like anything else, something that feels more comfortable as you practice it.
So what I'm trying to lead into is really enjoy this process, because, and keep in mind that this is not going to be perfect, and that your first hires, even if it's not the hiring process, but maybe the bigger problem is the way that you manage this team or this person, is going to be a big of a problem. But hope for the best, but expect that it's not going to be that way. In many cases, you're just learning. There are going to be mishaps, and those hires are not going to work out. So have a plan what's going to come next. Document the things that you are doing right now. Document the things that you are sharing with this hire, because there is going to be a next hire. And then so that you don't need to rework all of those things, but you already have like a document or a folder with all the things that you can just share with the next hire.
That's actually a great point too, which is one of the things that I like to point out about creating a technical exercise or even giving the initial screen is create a repeatable process, because it's very unlikely that you'll make one or two hires and never have to hire anyone again. Either people will leave or you'll grow, but this is a process that's worth investing time into. So you might say to yourself, well, why would I want to go out of my way to create a code base for a technical hiring exercise when I'm only hiring one person? And it's very likely that you'll use that stuff again, and it's worth your time, and also allows you to give you something to improve upon when you realize, oh, okay, I should have done this or that better. You know what your starting point was.
I know for me, I hired more than 100 people. A bunch of them were freelancers and remote people, and some of them were in the office working next to me. And even after making more than 100 hires, I'm still making mistakes. And there are still things that you're just not able to predict. At the beginning, it's going to be even worse because you don't have experience. You will not be as successful. So I think setting expectations for yourself and the result that's going to come out of this hire is an important piece of this, so that you are not devastated when in a couple of months something happens, because there is a learning curve to learning how to hire and manage people.
The other thing, there is no perfect candidate. You'll hire somebody who has certain strengths and weaknesses. People are very adaptable. The other thing is they will oftentimes learn the things or adapt to the situation that they find themselves in, especially if they're passionate about working for your company. I've seen lots of people really start to dive into areas that were not their strengths before because they love what they do and want to improve and grow in their careers.
Are there any other questions that I didn't ask you, but I should have?
one of the most critical points I think of interviewing is also allowing the candidate to ask you questions and really thinking about what the implications of those questions are. Not only am I interviewing them, but they're interviewing me. If they're not going to be happy in, you know, the team or working on the specific product, like, they deserve to know that as early on in the interview process as possible, because it saves both parties a lot of time. And I think that being really conscious of what kinds of questions someone is asking and what those questions might imply is something that I always like to think about too.
Are there any books that were most impactful for you?
In terms of hiring, I don't think so. The most impactful thing for me has been learning and iterating on all the experiences that I have had. I think there are a lot of great resources out there about management and how to start off in a new situation, but I think that hiring is one of those areas where there's a lot of great talks and articles you can read, but one of the things you're going to learn is definitely from experience.
Well, thank you so much for this time, Nicole. Where can our listeners learn more about you and connect with you?
I'm pretty much on all the standard social media platforms. I'm on LinkedIn under my name, Nicole Tibaldi, and as well as on Twitter. And from there, there are links out to all my personal resources, including my personal website and blog posts, talks that I've given in the cases where they're recorded, or slide decks. So you can also learn more about this actual very topic from some other talks that I've given as well.
Awesome. Thanks a lot, Nicole.
Thank you.
And that's it for this episode. For those tech founders who have a remote team, I have a question. Do you find yourself that it's much faster for you to do things by yourself than waste all of that mental energy delegating tasks to someone? And so you either don't hire anyone, or if you already have a remote team, you're guilty of doing those tasks by yourself, because there's just so much energy goes into delegating the tasks and then just managing people. Are you able to take a few days off and not be worried that your servers will go down or your support is going to blow up? What if you could work on more strategic, important things and let your team fix the bugs? If you only started building your team in the last couple of years, I guarantee that you are making lots of mistakes that hinder your growth without even realizing that. Oftentimes, you, the founder, may end up being the bottleneck to your team's success. That is definitely hard to swallow, but it's true. But also, look on the bright side, this is also the easiest problem for you to fix, because you are in control of how to fix it. I'll be launching soon a program that will help tech founders improve your team performance, and as a result, remove the roadblocks to scaling your SaaS just by improving your operations and team dynamic. This is really the shortcut. To be notified when it's live, go to my website, natalieluneva.com/team. natalieluneva.com/team.